حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: ألم أعهد إليكم يا بني آدم أن لا تعبدوا الشيطان إنه لكم عدو مبين وأن اعبدوني هذا صراط مستقيم. صلوات على محمد وآل محمد. One of the things that shaitan does to people to misguide them, to lead them astray, is that he tells them to do senseless things, irrational things, and they start doing it. And they start believing in things that do not make sense or have no basis, no proofs. And this quality that shaitan infuses in them is something that he himself has portrayed. He himself has shown. That's why he's giving this quality to others. When Allah asked Shaitan and said, "Ma manaka an la tasjuda idh amartuk," he says, "Why didn't you make sajda? Why didn't you prostrate when I commanded you to? When I'm the one commanding you, I'm the one ordering you to do it, why didn't you do it?" So you see, understand what Allah is asking. What is the question here? The question, Allah is basing it on the fact that He commanded Shaitan to do this. He commanded everyone to do it. Now look at Shaitan's answer. Shaitan answers back and says, when Allah asks him, "Why didn't you make sajda?" He says, "Ana khayrun minhu. Ana khayrun minhu. I am better than him. خَلَقْتَهُ مِنْ تِينٍ وَخَلَقْتَنِي مِنْ نَارٍ." He says that you created him from dirt, mud, and you created me from fire. You see, I want you to see the reply of Shaitan. And I want you to see the question that Allah is asking. Allah is saying that, listen, I commanded you to make sajda. Why didn't you do it? He's saying, well, I am better than he is. Do you understand the answer now? The answer has nothing to do with the question. Allah is basing his question on the fact that I commanded you. I didn't say Adam is better or you are better. That wasn't the issue at all. The issue was, it was my amr. It was my command. I commanded you. Why didn't you prostrate? And Shaitan is saying, I'm better than he is. Who cares if you're better than him? Doesn't matter if you're better than him. And then he explains it. He says, you made him from mud and you made me from fire. Now, understand. Is this logical? Who said, in which book is it written, in which dictionary or encyclopedia is written that fire is better than mud? Who made that claim? Where did that fact come from? That fire is better than mud. Who said that? There's no such thing. It's him in his own mind, he's thinking that fire is better than mud. That itself doesn't make sense. And Allah is saying that, listen, the issue is not if Adam is better or you are better. The issue is I am commanding you. I am the one who's giving the amr. And hence, Shaitan gave this senseless answer that has no relationship with the question. It has nothing to do with the question. And himself has made it clear. One thing that we learn from this right away, that whenever you oppose Allah, whenever you oppose Allah, the first thing yet that you lose is your aql. The first thing that you lose is that you become senseless, you don't know how to do things logically, rationally. No matter how intelligent you are in other things, but when it comes to opposing Allah, you will see that right away, you lose your aql. This is why Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam has said, he had said that we thank Allah that Allah has made our enemies dumb and stupid. Ahmak and Asfa. You know, they are stupid. Now it's not that they are not clever. It's just that when they want to do something, when they want to harm the truth, when they want to fight against Haq, that's when they lose their aql. They do things that make no sense. I'll give you some examples so you understand it very clearly. How they lose their aql and how they lose their reasoning at the time they oppose Allah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. In the night of Hijrat, when the Prophet was leaving Makkah, he had asked for Ali to come and asked Ali that, Ali, would you sleep on my bed? Ali agreed and the Prophet left. There were 40 people standing outside the house waiting to assassinate the Prophet. Now, they were outside and Imam Ali was sleeping on the bed of the Prophet. You know, now this is another thing that when you look at the life of Ali, it is known that Ali never slept the whole night. Meaning, most of the night Ali used to spend in ibadat and worship, in praying. Probably this is the only night when he slept the whole night. The whole night Imam Ali slept. And they're all waiting outside. This is in Makkah now. In Makkah, you know, it's hot, it's desert, you know, there's dust, there are bugs, so many things. And they're all waiting outside. Waiting to do what? To kill the Prophet, which they thought is in bed sleeping. And they waited the whole night. And in the morning, they came in to assassinate him. Now the question is this. Right? The real question is this. If I was there, and if I wasn't, for example, a journalist, and I wanted to interview those guys, right? He says, hey guys, what are you doing outside here? He said, we're waiting to kill the Prophet. Okay. Why aren't you going in and doing it? Because he's sleeping. Okay. So you're, what are you waiting for? We're waiting for him to get up so we can kill him. Isn't it better if you just go in when he's sleeping? And when he's sleeping, he can't fight back. Go in and do it while he's sleeping. But you're waiting the whole night in the heat outside, in the dust and the bugs and all these things, losing your sleep, and you're waiting for him to get up. I mean, if you had sense, you would have gone when he's sleeping and killed him. What happened? What happened here? You see, this is where Allah takes away your aql. You don't think straight.
You don't think straight. I mean, you should have gone there while he's sleeping and killed him. You are waiting the whole night for him to wake up. And when he wakes up, you go in. My friends, is this the height of irrational behavior or not? They should have killed him at the night when he's sleeping. But you see, this is how Allah makes you stupid when you want to fight against Haq. This is how you lose your aql. I mean, you're clever in so many things that you do. But when it comes to opposing the Haq, this is where Allah makes you so dumb that you make irrational decisions. That's what happens. And you see these same people. Right? After that, when you see Rasulullah went and he hid in Ghar-e Hira. I don't know how many of you have been to Hajj or Umrah, to Medina, from here. Any Hajis here? Okay, Alhamdulillah. So, inshallah, if you haven't been there, may Allah give you the tawfiq to go for Hajj, inshallah. Right? If you go there, right, you'll see that the Ghar-e Hira is on a mountain, Jabal al-Nur. Right? You go on the mountain. In order to get there, nowadays, you know, there's a walk path and everything, you know, and there are steps also made. So it's easier. Right? But even with all that amenities, it takes about an hour to get up there. It takes about 1 hour to get up there. And it's a hard climb. It's not an easy climb. It is a hard climb. In those days, when there are no steps and nothing, these guys, they took their time getting all the way up there. Whatever trail they saw, they went all the way up there. It's tiring. When you get up there, you're like tired. You're trying to catch your breath. Because you're climbing a mountain. You go all the way on top of the mountain. Right? They work so hard to get on top of the mountain. Then they come to the mouth of the cave. Right? Actually, this is that cave. You see that where the prophet was hiding. And when you go to that cave, you see it takes an hour to get up there. You go to the mouth of the cave, and what do they see? A spider web. They see a spider web. Now my friends, tell me, after 1 hour of hard work getting to the mouth of the cave, you see a spider web, say, oh, well, it's not here, let's go back. It's only a spider web. Right? Allah, He gives the example of the spider web. He says, "Inna awhana al-buhuyut labaitil ankabut." The weakest house, the weakest home is the home of the spider. The spider web. How hard it is to break it. You can just blow it and it'll go away. They climbed 1 hour, but they didn't have the sense to break the spider web and look inside. After 1 hour of climbing up there, they should have had the sense. They should have had the sense that you break it and see inside. After all that hard work, you see, they see the spider-man and says, oh, well, I guess he's not here. Yeah, let's go. Let's go back all the way down again. I mean, what happened? Understand this. What happened if you were smart? If you were intelligent, you worked 1 hour to get here, break it and go in and see it. But you see, this is Allah who takes away your aql. He takes away your reasoning. You can't think straight. This is how Allah protects His truth. He makes the enemies of Ahlul Bayt and the enemies of Haq so dumb that they don't know what to do when the time comes for them to use their aql. This is how you see that when you oppose Haq, this is what happens. Shaitan, when he replied to Allah and said, I am better than he, Allah is saying, I didn't ask you if you are better than him. I said, I commanded you to make sajda. Why didn't you make sajda? And he is teaching his stupidity to mankind. And wants us to become stupid. An idiot. And this is what happens whenever, my friends, understand this. When we oppose the truth. Anyone who opposes Islam, anyone who opposes Allah, they will lose their aql, they will lose their reasoning. They won't be able to make the decision they want to make. Allah will make them stupid so that they don't understand what's happening. And this is how Allah trains us and teaches us. He says, if you work for Allah, if you stand up for Islam, and if you fight for Allah's cause, then you see, even if there's a spider web between you and them, Allah will make that spider web protect you. Allah will make that spider web protect you. Their weapons were stronger. They had swords. They could have easily broken that spider web. But you see, their swords were no match for the spider web. Because Allah willed it. And say, remember, this is how much we should trust Allah. That if we work for Islam, do not think that their weapons can ever harm you. If you trust Allah, then you see, even if it's a spider web, Allah will protect you against their weapons, even if there's a spider web between you and them. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. This is something that we need to understand. And shaitan, he infuses this into mankind to believe in baseless things, senseless things. And we start believing in them. And we lose the foundation that Islam gave us. The strong foundation that Islam gave us. Our aqidah is not based on dreams. Our aqidah is based on firm and sound reasoning. That's why we are strong. That's why Allah wanted us to be strong. So now when shaitan was kicked out, now obviously his job was to misguide mankind. And my friends, from here I will start through history. How did shaitan misguide mankind? What were the weapons that he used? We will go through the weapons that shaitan uses to misguide mankind. And these weapons, used one at a time. One at a time, he used those weapons. And the first weapon, the first assault of shaitan, the first weapon that shaitan uses to misguide mankind is called hasad. Hasad is envy or jealousy. This is the first weapon that shaitan used against mankind. First thing that he used to misguide mankind. And this happened in the time of Adam. And he put envy between the children of Adam, Abel and Qabil. And this weapon that he has, which is hasad, weapon that he has, hasad, is a weapon that he himself was inflicted with. A lot of people think that yes, you know, that he was kicked out because he had pride. But you see, his answer is saying that it was hasad because he was kicked out of Mecca. Envy. He couldn't stand the fact that he worshipped Allah for 6,000 years. Obeyed him for 6,000 years. And this new kid on the block, Adam, new kid on the block, he comes around and he becomes the Khalifa, Allah's representative, his vicegerent. How can that be? He could not handle that fact. He couldn't take it that is the case. And hence you see, envy is such an evil thing. Envy is such an evil thing that shaitan, it afflicted shaitan and it made him, my friend, understand what happened to shaitan. He knew that if he opposes this, he will be condemned forever. He will be condemned forever. But he was willing to stand the curse. He was willing to stand, withstand being cursed forever and being condemned forever than to bow down one time before Adam. I mean, if, you know, a smart person, if they were the businessman and this and that, you know, just looking at it from a worldly point of view. Right? From a worldly point of view. Say that, you know what? If you don't do this, you have life imprisonment. And the work requires you nothing. Just one prostration. If you don't prostrate, it's life imprisonment. I mean, if I was smart, I would be like, it's only one prostration, even though I don't like Adam and this and that, I don't want to get jailed for one all my whole life. I'll do it. Even if I don't want to do it, I'll do it. You see, I mean, if we made a smart decision, we'll be like, we'll do it, who cares? I don't like him, I don't like this, but at least I won't be going to jail forever. But you see, hasad is that. Envy is that. Sin. That influence, that emotion, that makes you won't, that makes you won't make that decision that you will be cursed forever, but you are not willing to bow down just for 1 second. Just 1 second you could have bowed down and saved yourself such a trouble. But you see, because of that envy he had, he could not do it. It made him such that he did not want to prostrate before Adam. Really, my friends, look at that. Now, we need to understand first what is hasad. What is this envy? Let me define it for you if you send me a salawat. Allahumma
salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
In your life, you come face to face with many people. Your friends, family, workers, in every place you go, you will meet people and come face to face with people. Whenever you meet someone who is better than you, who is more gifted than you are, who is more talented than you are, whenever you meet someone who is better than you, for example, if you are a mechanic, you come face to face with another mechanic who's better than you are. He's much more intelligent than you are. If you're a doctor, you come face to face with a doctor who's better than you are. You're a teacher, if you come face to face with a teacher who's better than you are, more gifted than you are. If you are, let's say, a football player, a basketball player, and you come across someone who is more talented than you are, then whenever you come face to face with someone who's better than you are, there are two types of reactions that you can have. There are two types of reactions that you can have. If someone is competent, if someone is good, then whenever he sees someone better than he is, he would want to be like him. He would aspire to be like someone better. And whenever, or the next reaction is that if you're incompetent, then when you come face to face with someone who's better than you are, then your wish is, you don't have aspirations to be like him, you want to bring him down to your level. You want him to be lower, so he can be at your level. Two reactions you have. Either you aspire to be like someone better, or you want that person to be like you. This first emotion of aspiring to be like others is called ghibta. It's called ghibta in Arabic. And the emotion of wanting to bring him down to your level, this is called hasad or envy. This is what hasad is. Hasad is that emotion that when you come face to face with someone who's better than you are, you want to bring him down to your level. This is hasad, this is envy. Ghibta is encouraged in Islam. Ghibta, meaning aspiring to be like someone who's better than you are, is encouraged in Islam. Islam and Allah wanted you that whenever you see someone better than you are, want to be like them. This is why we have in the hadith from Imam Baqir alayhi salatu wasalam. He had said, and understand this hadith and you'll understand what ghibta is. He said that when it comes to dunya, you should look at people, for example, in worldly things like wealth, worldly positions. When it comes to worldly positions, he says, do not look at those who have more than you, look at those who have less than you. Always keep your focus on those who have less than you. And when it comes to akhirat, meaning issues of hereafter, of faith and piety and knowledge, then do not look at people who are lower than you are, meaning who have less than you. Look at people who have more than you. Look at people who have more than you. Why? Because when you look at, in worldly sense, when you look at people who have more than you, then you would want what they have. Meaning if you see someone has a bigger house and your eyes are in his house, then you want a bigger house for yourself. When you see someone who has a better car, then you want a better car for yourself. That's why in worldly sense, look at people who are poorer. Because when you look at those who have less than you, then you will be thankful for what you have. You will be appreciative of what you have and thank God for the things that you have. Otherwise, if you look at the rich, then you'll be looking at your house and saying, oh, what a dump do I live in. And you will hate yourself for driving the car that you drive. It always breaks down. A used car. Right? It always breaks down. It's a used car. Right? And you look at other people's car, it's brand new. Right? And you'll be like, hating what you have. That's why Imam said, do not look at the rich, at the lives of the rich. Look at those who are poor, so you can be thankful for what Allah has given you. So that you can do shukr to those that Allah has given you. But in matters of akhirat and issues of akhirat, then he says, do not look at those who are lower than you. Meaning those, for example, who sin, who drink alcohol, who watch haram things. Do not look at those people who are lower than you. Look at those people who are higher than you. Because if you look at those people who are lower than you, who sin all the time that you don't, and but you see that they do those sins that you don't. I mean, we all sin, we all do wrong, we all make mistakes. But when you see someone doing evil and crimes and this and that, you see, well, at least I'm not like him. Huh, I'm good. You start believing that you are good. When you see someone who's lower than you, you say, well, at least I don't do that. At least I don't rape people. At least I don't kill people. So I'm better than him. You see, this quality comes when you look at those who are lower than you in that regard. Lower than you in that regard. That's why it is said, look at those people who are higher than you, meaning who have more piety, who are stronger in worship, who are stronger in knowledge. Why? Because then when you look at them, you would want to be like them. You would increase yourself and improve yourself so that you can be like them. But you see, this is one ideology Imam had taught. Just in that regard, one incident I will mention so you understand. When it comes to being better or lower than someone, we need to understand something, my friends, very clearly. Right? Moses, Musa alayhi salam, when he was the leader of the people and the prophet of the time, he had a thought in his mind that I am an ulul azm prophet, so I should be better than everyone else. It was just a thought, a passing thought in his mind. And Allah wanted to show him something, teach him a lesson. So he called Moses and said, Moses, grab that this necklace that was there. You know, it was a rope, right? He says, Moses, I have a task for you today. A workshop, and hands-on activity. Moses said, anything for you, my Lord. He says, go and put this around someone that you think is lower than you are. Someone who's lower than you are. Go put this rope around someone. Someone's neck. So Moses took that rope and he went around looking for someone who is lower than he is. He went around, saw different people, says, no, they cannot be lower than me. They can't be lower than that, you know. I mean, he said that, no, it can't be. So he was on his way back and he saw a dead dog that was rotting on the side of the street. He says, maybe this dog is lower than I am. It's a dead dog rotting on the side of the street. He saw the dead dog and he said, maybe this dog is lower than I am. And then as soon as he had that thought, he erased that thought saying that no, it cannot be. Because that dog is a dog because God made him a dog. I am a prophet because God made me a prophet. There's nothing great in me being a prophet. There's nothing low in him being a dog. It is God who made him that. It is God who made me this. It is Allah who made me this. So he went back to Allah. And Allah said, what happened, Moses? I asked you to do something. Why don't you do it? He said, oh, Ya Allah, I can't. He said, oh, why not? He said, there's no one who's lower than me. Why? Because Allah, it is you who made me, it is you who made him. We aren't the one who's great, it is you who's great. It is you who's great, not me, not them. We are what you made us to be. And then Allah told him that, Moses, if you had put this rope around that dog, I would have taken you off of the list of Anbiya and Prophets. You won't be a prophet anymore. In other words, my friends, understand, when it comes to being low or great, no. All thanks is for Allah. If Allah has given us faith, then all thanks to Him that He has given us faith. If He has given us anything of goodness, it is all thanks to Him that we have it. We have nothing from ourselves. Nothing from ourselves. And that's how, you see, this is the ideology of Islam when you look at others. So ghibta is when you see someone who is better than you and you aspire to be like them. You want to be like them. It is said by Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salatu wasalam. And you know, he said these words, and I want you to pay attention to this. He says, Inna Ammi al-Abbas darajatun inda Allah yaghbiduna al-awwaluna wal-akhirun. He says, my uncle Abbas, Abul Fadl Abbas, he has a position. He has a position near Allah that the first and the last of all great men are aspiring to be like him. Aspiring to have that position. They will look up to him. The prophets will look up to Abbas and say, we want the position that Abbas has. Everyone will look up to the position that Abbas has. And they will look up to him and say that we want to be at his rank, at his position. How did he reach that? And then they would aspire to be like him. And you see, why not? Because there's a difference between Abbas and everyone else in this world who was born before and after. The difference between Abul Fadl Abbas and everyone else. Everyone who is born, everyone, he's born, first of all, that light of faith kindles in his heart. He becomes mu'min. After he becomes mu'min, then he wants to sacrifice for his creator. Then he wants to sacrifice for his creator. You see that? He wants to give his life for his creator, for his master. Everyone. When you look at Adam, when you look at Nuh, when you look at Ismail and Jesus and everyone, they were born and they then had the emotion of sacrifice that they want to sacrifice for their master and creator. Everyone. But then Abbas is different. Abbas is different. The reason he's different is that everyone was born and then they sacrificed, but Abbas was born to be sacrificed. Abbas's sacrifice was known before he was born. Imam Ali made the intention of sacrificing Abbas even before Abbas was conceived. He was born to be sacrificed. And hence that's why that sacrifice that has been intended before it is born, that person is known as Abbas. That's why everyone aspires to be like him. Like everyone wants to be like Ali. Everyone wants to be like Ali. But really, Who can be like him? You can be like him in something or the other. But there's always one thing that Allah has made with his birth. Since his birth, he has given Ali something that no one can be equal to him in that regard. Everyone can try to have some quality or another of Ali, and they might reach it, they might not reach it. But there's one thing that Allah had made in Ali that no one will be able to have. No one can have, even if they try to have it. And that is, he made Ali be born inside the Kaaba. Allah gave him that fazilat in the birth so that no one can be like him. Because no one can choose that. No one can choose that. They're born, they don't know which house they're born in. You don't know which house you're born in, you're just born. But it is Allah who chose where Ali is going to be born. Yes, my friends, this is a fazilat that you see that Allah has given them. That we, when He wanted us to aspire to be like them. But those who are weak, those who are daif, to them, when they see Ali, they can't be like him, so they want to bring down Ali to their level. They want to bring down Ali to their level. When they saw the Prophet, they saw he's greater than them, so now they want to bring him down to their level. There's one last thing, you know. Understand this. They couldn't withstand the Prophet that, you know what, he... You see this. Muslims try so hard to put down the Prophet. Oh, Prophet is nothing, he couldn't even read and write. Couldn't even read and write. What are you talking about, he couldn't even read and write? Yes. You know what I mean? Isn't that? Why are you trying to emphasize that? Why? Because they saw that the Prophet is better than them. Instead of trying to be like them, they wanted him to be like their own selves. Instead of being like him, instead of trying to be like him, you want to bring him down. And they look for points. They say, oh, he can't read and write. Who said he can't read and write? Who said he can't read and write? Yes? And you see that even our people, you know, they try to, you know, think that. Even some of our ulama have written down in their books. Ummi means that he is illiterate. It doesn't mean he's illiterate. It means he's uneducated. He wasn't educated by any man. It is Allah who taught him. Ar-Rahman, Allah al-Quran. He is the one who taught the Prophet. And Allah taught the Prophet. So now, they came to this understanding that, oh, he cannot read and write. Right? And we are also into that. And I just want to get rid of that doubt. So that anyone who has this. And friends, you know, just one or two things I'll say. There are many other things, you know. But because of the lack of time, I'll just say one or two things. So you understand it very well. Right? Really, the Prophet, his character that we have seen, that he has shown, that Allah has attested to, is that he would never ask anyone to do something but that he himself has done it before everyone else. This is that Prophet who would pray the whole night where his feet are bleeding. And Allah had to stop him and say, Taha wa ma anzalna al-Qur'ana litashqa. We didn't reveal this Qur'an so it can be a burden on you, that you make it hard on yourself. It is that Prophet who used to pray the whole night, and he used to tell people, okay, you pray only 5 times a day. Only 17 rakat for you, but I will pray the whole night to Allah. That Prophet who does himself, he sacrifices himself before he will ever ask anyone to do it. Even when you hear about that incident of a mother who came with a boy who ate too much honey, right? The Prophet said that I will advise him, but not today, come back tomorrow. And when he came back tomorrow, he advised him, don't eat honey. So why didn't you say the same thing yesterday? You said the same thing yesterday, you're going to save me a trip. Because yesterday I ate honey, I couldn't advise him because I have done it myself. You see, that Prophet who would never say something to someone unless that he does it and knows the Quran, he knows Allah, where Allah says, "Kabura maqtan inda Allahi an taqulu ma la taf'alun." Allah hates those who say things that they don't do. Allah hates those. So now, if that is the character of the Prophet, then when the Prophet is telling and everyone, he is encouraging everyone that you should read and write, if he's encouraging others, how is it possible that he should not do it and he is asking everyone else to do it? They don't understand what kind of an assault they are hurting the Prophet's character with when they say that. He's encouraging you to read and write. He's saying for you to write. He himself is not going to learn. Or no? Understand that, my friends. This is something that we need to understand. What this assaults and these assaults have been made by those who were enemies, who don't know, and they wanted to bring him down because of hasad that they had, that envy that they had with him. And we also, Allah started also believing in that. Now I'll ask you something. How many letters does the Arabic language have? 28 letters. Right? 28 letters. From Aleph to Ya. Right? 28 letters. Now tell me, how long does it take for you to learn 28 letters? If it's your own language. If you're an Arab, if you want to say that this one line is Aleph, this is Ba, this is Ta, how long does it take? Right? It shouldn't take more than a few hours. Right? It shouldn't take more than a few hours for someone who's dumb. And for someone who's intelligent, he would know right away. If this is your own language, English is my language, you ask me to read A, B, C, D, the alphabet, how long does it take me to read that? A, B, C, you know, you recognize it right away. Now tell me, you're telling me that the most intelligent person that walked on this planet Earth, the greatest person to walk on this planet Earth, he couldn't take 15 minutes of his time to read 28 letters of his language, and he's telling everyone else to do it? My friend, understand what kind of logic and rationale are we following? This is something that we need to think about and understand. Ideology, and what is the right ideology, and who is the Prophet, and who are Ahlul Bayt? We need to understand the right way of understanding who these people are, so that we don't have the wrong concepts in our mind. I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to give us the tawfiq and the blessing to be on the right paths. Give us the wisdom to understand His guidance. Hasten the reappearance of our Imam. Make us His helper when He comes. وآخر الدعوانا الحمد لله رب العالمين. صلوات محمد وآل محمد.